I wonder what it looks like from the inside. Speaker heard, and he touched a control point, and the view slid. The magnification was not yet great enough to pick up details. Bright blue and brighter white slid across the scope screen, and the blurred straight edge of a navy blue shadow. The further rim slid into view. Here, the rim wall was tilted outward. Nessus, standing in the doorway with his heads poised above Speaker's shoulders, ordered, "Give us what magnification you can." The view expanded. "Mountains," said Teela. "How lovely." For the rim wall was irregular, sculptured like eroded rock, and was the color of the moon. "Mountains 1,000 miles high." "I can expand the view no further. For greater detail, we must approach closer."
"Let us first attempt to contact them," said the puppeteer. "Are we at rest?"
Speaker consulted the ship's brain. "We are approaching the primary at perhaps 30 miles per second. Is that slow enough?"
"Yes, begin transmissions."
No laser light was falling on the lyre. Testing for electromagnetic radiation was more difficult. Radio, infrared, ultraviolet, X-rays, the whole spectrum had to be investigated, from the room temperature heat given off by the dark side of the ring world, up to light quanta energetic enough to split into matter-antimatter pairs. The 21-centimeter band was empty, and so were its easy multiples and divisors, which might have been used merely because the hydrogen absorption band was so obvious. Beyond that point, Speaker to Animals was playing blind man's bluff with his receivers. The great pods of communications equipment on the lyre's wing had opened. The lyre was sending radio messages on the hydrogen absorption frequency and others, bathing successive portions of the ring's inner surface with laser light of 10 different frequencies, and sending interworld Morse in alternate blasts of the fusion motors.
"Our autopilot would eventually translate any possible message," said Nessus. "We must assume that their ground-based computers are at least as capable."
Speaker's reply was venomous. "Can your leucotomized computers translate total silence?"
"Concentrate your sendings at the rim. If they have spaceports, the spaceports must be at the rim. To land a spacecraft anywhere else would be horribly dangerous."
In the hero's tongue, Speaker to Animals snarled something horribly insulting. Effectively, it ended the conversation, but Nessus stayed where he had been for hours now, with his heads poised alertly above the Kazin's shoulders. The ring world waited beyond the hull, a checkered blue ribbon trailing across the sky.
"You tried to tell me about Dyson spheres," said Teela.
"And you told me to go pick lice out of my hair." Louis had found a description of Dyson spheres in the ship's library. Excited by the idea, he had made the mistake of interrupting Teela's game of solitaire to tell her about it.
"Tell me now," she coaxed.
"Go pick lice out of your hair." She waited. "You win," said Louis. For the past hour, he had been staring broodingly out at the ring. He was as bored as she was. "I tried to tell you that the ring world is a compromise, an engineering compromise between a Dyson sphere and a normal planet. Dyson was one of the ancient natural philosophers, pre-Belt, almost pre-atomic. He pointed out that a civilization is limited by the energy available to it. The way for the human race to use all the energy within its reach, he said, is to build a spherical shell around the sun and trap every ray of sunlight. Now, if you'll quit giggling for just a minute, you'll see the idea. The Earth traps only about 0.5 billionth of the sun's output. If we could use all that energy... Well, it wasn't crazy then. There wasn't even a theoretical basis for faster-than-light travel. We never did invent hyperdrive, if you'll recall. We'd never have discovered it by accident either, because we'd never have thought to do our experiments out beyond the singularity. Suppose an outsider ship hadn't stumbled across a United Nations ram robot. Suppose the fertility laws hadn't worked out. With 1 trillion human beings standing on each other's shoulders and the ram ships the fastest thing around, how long could we get along on fusion power? We'd use up all the hydrogen in Earth's oceans in 100 years. But there's more to a Dyson sphere than collecting solar power. Say you make the sphere 1 astronomical unit in radius. You've got to clear out the solar system anyway, so you use all the solar planets in the construction. That gives you a shell of, say, chrome steel a few yards thick. Now, you put gravity generators all over the shell. You'd have a surface area a billion times as big as the Earth's surface. A trillion people could wander all their lives without ever meeting one another. Teela finally got a full sentence in edgewise.
You're using the gravity generators to hold everything down?
Yeah, against the inside. We cover the inside with soil.
What if one of the gravity generators broke down?
Picky, picky, picky. Well, you'd get a billion people drifting up into the sun. All the air swarming up after them. A tornado big enough to swallow the Earth. Not a prayer of getting a repair crew in. Not through that kind of a storm.
I don't like it, Teela said decisively.
Well, let's not be hasty. There may be ways to make a gravity generator foolproof.
Not that. You couldn't see the stars.
Louis hadn't thought of that aspect. Well, never mind. The point about Dyson spheres is that any sentient industrial race is eventually going to need one. The technological civilizations tend to use more and more power as time goes on. The ring is a compromise between a normal planet and a Dyson sphere. With the ring, you get only a fraction of the available room, and you block only a fraction of the available sunlight. But you can see the stars, and you don't have to worry about gravity generators. From the control room, speaker to animals snarled something complicated, a sound powerful enough to curse the very air of the cabin. Teela giggled. If the puppeteers had been thinking along the same lines as Dyson, Louis concluded, they might very well expect to find the clouds of Magellan riddled with ringworlds edge to edge.
And that's why we were called in.
I'd hate to bet on a puppeteer's thoughts, but if I had to, that's the way I'd bet.
No wonder you've been spending all your time in the library.
Infuriating, screamed the Kazin. Insulting! They deliberately ignore us. They pointedly turn their backs to invite attack.
Improbable, said Nessus. If you cannot find radio transmissions, then they do not use radio. Even if they were routinely using radio lasers, we would detect some leakage.
They do not use lasers, they do not use radio, they do not use hyperwave. What are they using for communication? Telepathy? Written messages? Big mirrors?
Parrots, Louis suggested. He got up to join them at the door to the control room. Huge parrots, specially bred for their oversized lungs. They're too big to fly. They just sit on hilltops and scream at each other. Speaker turned to look Louis in the eye.
For 4 hours, I have tried to contact the Ringworld. For 4 hours, the inhabitants have ignored me. Their contempt has been absolute. Not a word have they vouchsafed me. My muscles are trembling for lack of exercise. My fur is matted. My eyes refuse to focus. My thundat-begotten room is too small. My microwave heater heats all meat to the same temperature, and it is the wrong temperature, and I cannot get it fixed. Were it not for your help and your suggestions, Louis, I would despair.
Can they have lost their civilization? Nessus mused. It would be silly of them, considering.
Perhaps they are dead, Speaker said viciously. That too would be silly. Not to contact us has been silly. Let us land and find out.
Nessus whistled in panic.
Land on a world which may have killed its indigenous species? Are you mad?
How else can we learn?
Of course, Teela chimed in. We didn't come all this way just to fly in circles. I forbid it. Speaker, continue your attempts to contact the ring world.
I have ended such attempts.
Repeat them.
I will not.
In stepped Louis Wu, volunteer diplomat. Cool it, furry buddy. Nessus, he's right. The Ringworlders don't have anything to say to us, otherwise we'd know it by now.
But what can we do other than keep trying?
Go on about our business. Give the Ringworlders time to make up their minds about us.
Reluctantly, the puppeteer agreed.
They drifted toward the Ringworld. Speaker had aimed the lyre to pass outside the Ringworld's edge, a concession to Nessus. The puppeteer feared that hypothetical Ringworlders would take it as a threat if the ship's course should intersect the ring itself. He also claimed that fusion drives of the lyre's power had the look of weapons, so the lyre moved on thrusters alone. To the eye, there was no way of judging scale. Over the hours, the ring shifted position, too slowly. With cabin gravity to compensate for from 0 to 30 g of thrust, the inner ear could not sense motion. Time passed in a vacuum, and Louis, for the first time since leaving Earth, was ready to gnaw his fingernails. Finally, the ring was edge-on to the lyre. Speaker used the thrusters, breaking the ship into a circular orbit around the sun. Then he set them drifting in toward the rim. Now there was motion.